Hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of Wisconsin is now in session. Your silence is commanded.
Please be seated.
Well, welcome to this heat wave, right? Oh, my golly, what kind of weather. I've lived here a long time, and I've never seen anything like it. This morning, before we call the first case, my notes tell me that there are students from the University of Wisconsin Law School here. If they are, would they please stand? Oh, very nice.
Look at that.
Thank you. You may be seated. The students are here on a case and on our project called Court with Class, so they know a little bit about the case that you're going to argue. And since you have law students back there watching you, wow, it's going to be interesting from all sides.
Are you two fellas nervous now as a result of that?
Probably not. I think they've argued once or twice before, so they probably know the drill. Okay, so I'll call the first case, Light Transfer versus Liebel. Are you ready to proceed? Please do.
Please, the court. I'm George Burnett. I represent Light Transfer.
Just one second. I'm not hearing you at all.
I'm George Burnett, and I represent
Much better. Thank you.
Light Transfer in this case, the appellant here today. The issue before the court, as the court is aware, is whether a forgery insurance policy covers delivery tickets that were used to direct payment of an invoice. Briefly, by way of background, Light is a longtime warehouse company in Green Bay. Georgia Pacific was an important client, and Pallet Central was a broker that furnished pallets. The procedure was that pallets would be delivered, and then Pallet Central would send a voucher. The voucher consisted of an invoice from Pallet Central, a delivery ticket that was Pallet Central's, and a delivery ticket signed by Light Transfer. The reason we're here today is that the delivery ticket carried a forged signature of a Light shipping or receiving representative.
Counsel, just for clarification for the facts, did the invoice and the delivery ticket, the signed delivery ticket, were they all presented together? Or was it the delivery ticket that was signed and then subsequently an invoice was sent?
I didn't handle the case at the circuit court, but my understanding is that came together as a packet. And I should advise that sometimes the delivery ticket that was Light's was missing and the forged delivery ticket was cut and pasted on Pallet Central's copy. So there were sometimes three documents, sometimes two documents delivered.
Counsel,
I have a copy of the invoice, and on it, it shows the number of the delivery ticket to which it is coordinated. Those were in the record. Mm-hmm. So it appears if they weren't presented together, you had to have a delivery ticket number on the invoice.
I don't have a... a clear memory of the whether the sample and the record were intended to go together or not. That's Ms. Bardos's affidavit. It's record entry number 19, and we have
Yeah, that contains that entry is what I was looking at, and it contains a delivery ticket that is the same delivery ticket that is referenced then on the invoice.
Correct.
As part of that exhibit.
The delivery ticket and the invoice appear to go together in this sample.
Okay, so I guess the question is, since we're concerned about payment, would an invoice have been prepared without a delivery ticket?
The invoice was prepared by Pallet Central. The delivery ticket would have arrived with the pallets according to usual practice. I don't know that is fully described in the record, though.
Okay.
So you can't... I'm sorry. Were you done?
Yeah, I am. Yes.
So you can't... So they can't get paid without the signed delivery ticket.
Exactly. It is... And that's what they forged, and that's why they forged it, because without a signed delivery ticket, the practice and procedure is that there is no payment.
But that was just a practice or procedure that these companies set up between themselves, right?
That was Light's practice.
When I look at the insurance policy language, though, it says that the insurer will pay for loss resulting directly from forgery or alteration of checks, drafts, promissory notes, convenience checks, HELOC checks, or similar written promises, orders, or directions to pay. Where on the delivery ticket is there a written promise, order, or direction to pay?
The signature is tantamount to a direction to pay.
But that's based on the practice of these parties. So how would the insurance company, we have to look at it from the perspective of the insurance company as well as the reasonable expectations of the insured. How would the insurer know or have any idea that this is how these two parties operated for payment purposes?
They wouldn't unless they went into it in underwriting, which would be highly unusual. But the important point is that this is not a policy between Hiscox, the insurance company, and the industry. This is a contract between Hiscox and Light. And if Light used the document as a direction to pay, Hiscox covers it, even though they generally might not cover it. They might not think delivery tickets are typically used. That is the crux of where I say the circuit court and the court of appeals turned left when they should have turned right.
So, Counselor,
let's use a little bit. Can I just finish my line here? Thank you. I'm going to use a bit of a ridiculous example, so bear with me. But let's say that the practice between these two parties was not the issuance of delivery tickets or invoices. What if the parties said, you know, we're going to signal that it's okay to pay if I give you the fortune on a slip of paper from a fortune cookie? That'll be the signal that it's okay to pay. Would there be coverage for something like that?
Yes, there would, because it's a direction to pay. And it's close to the example, not identical, but close to the example that Hiscox used in its brief, which can be found on page 21 of its response brief. There, Hiscox said, well, what would be sufficiently similar? They said a letter of credit. Probably right. They said a payment authorization letter. Now, what would a payment authorization letter be? They don't quite explain it, but I'm assuming it's a letter from someone in a position of authority at Light saying, pay this invoice.
But the difference, I think, with that example is that there's something on that piece of paper that is actually expressly written out as a direction or order to pay versus a practice that is subsumed within the papers that are exchanged between the parties that signal payment. Do you see what I'm saying? That's where I'm struggling with. How is it a written direction to pay when there is no written express direction within the document?
You're saying the difference between coverage and non-coverage is one document says pay this bill and the other gives that same message that's recognized by everybody, but the direction is not expressly written out.
Yes.
Well, you go to the policy and you say, is this a written promise, order, or direction to pay? And the question is it in writing? Certainly it is. Delivery tickets in writing. Is it a direction to pay? Here it is. And thus there's coverage. You're saying that the way to read this policy might be that the direction to pay must be written on the policy.
Yes.
Now we have an ambiguity in the policy. Nothing
is it, though? Because the policy isn't written to cover an oral agreement, which I think is what we had here between the parties, that if you give me the delivery ticket, I will pay you. That's an oral agreement. And looking at the policy language, it references similar written promises, orders, or directions to pay.
Policy is written to cover forgeries. And what do you forge? You forge a writing. So what in this policy tells Light Transfer, if you forge a delivery ticket that everybody knows is a direction to pay, it's not covered, but if you forge a payment authorization letter, it is covered. That's why there's an ambiguity if you put forward the reading that you're proposing may be plausible here. Is the written, does the word written modify direction, or does it modify what has to be forged?
Counsel, you say that everybody understands that this is a direction to pay, but I think that's actually the nub of the dispute, whether this is a direction to pay.
That is.
So let me see if I can narrow this down a little bit. And part of this goes to, I'm not sure that I have a full understanding of the facts from what the record can tell us. So help me out with this. When the Pallet Central truck driver delivers the pallets, does he, as he is delivering the pallets, does he have in his hand the invoice and the delivery ticket at that point?
It's not described in the record, okay. But my understanding is yes.
And what is your understanding based on?
Not necessarily the invoice, but the delivery ticket he would
carry. We know he's got the delivery ticket in hand. We don't know if he has the invoice in hand.
Unlikely.
Okay. So I want to just kind of slow walk this transaction so I can pick up on the significance of each step of this. So let's say he's just got the delivery ticket in his hand. He drops off the pallets. He hands the delivery ticket to the warehouseman. The warehouseman signs off on it, right?
Right.
Okay. Is that delivery ticket at that point a direction to pay?
No, not without the invoice and the voucher.
All right. So now the delivery ticket has to go back to Pallet Central, right?
Right.
And then Pallet Central attaches that to a voucher and an invoice.
Well, let me just correct you again, and again we're outside the record. But the delivery ticket, one copy would stay with Light.
Yeah.
And the other copy would go back to Pallet Central.
Right. Yep. Right. And I think there are instructions on that, actually, on the face of the delivery ticket. So now a copy goes to Pallet Central.
Right.
Pallet Central attaches that copy to an invoice and a voucher and then sends that back to Light.
Right.
Correct? Okay. So what I'm trying to figure out then is the significance of the signature on the delivery ticket. So let's say that Pallet Central delivers the pallets, warehouseman signs off. Instead of taking this delivery ticket back to Pallet Central, he just walks over to accounts payable and says, okay, you can pay me now. Would he get paid?
Not without the invoice.
Okay. So the ticket by itself is not a direction to pay.
The ticket by itself with the invoice constitutes the full direction to pay. There's nothing to pay until the invoice arrives.
You're getting ahead of me here. So let's go step by step. So the delivery ticket standing alone, once the warehouseman hands it back to the driver, that's not going to get him paid, right?
No, the delivery ticket alone will not be payment because there's nothing on the delivery ticket that signals how much is owed.
Right. Okay. So now that goes back to Pallet Central, gets bundled with other documents, and then comes back. If it's not a direction to pay when the warehouseman signs off on it, how can it become a direction to pay at some later time?
Because for the same reason a payment authorization letter that Pallet Central or that Hiscox says would be a direction to pay is, it is in a group, in a packet of information that tells billing department two things. Number one, this is the amount that's owed. Number two, the pallets have been received, and then leads to the conclusion, number three, that you should pay this invoice. The invoice doesn't generate a payment. Forging the invoice would be of no benefit. Pallet Central's copy of the invoice, or copy of the delivery ticket, is worthless. Forging that doesn't matter. It is the delivery ticket that shows receipt and acknowledgement that is the direction to pay. That's what they forged. That's why they forged it.
Well, they forged it because they knew that that was a prerequisite to payment, right? Is there any distinction to be made between a prerequisite to payment on the one hand and on the other a direction to pay?
The words in this context are synonymous.
And why is that?
Because without that prerequisite to payment, there is no message delivered to billing finance to pay the invoice.
So should the rule that you want us to adopt be that any acknowledgement of receipt of goods operates as a direction to pay?
I'm sorry, could you say that again? Yeah. I didn't catch it.
Thinking through what we've got to decide later and then write, we've got to figure out what the rule is going to be that comes out of this case. So should the rule be that any acknowledgement of receipt of goods operates as a direction to pay for them?
If the parties utilize it as the signal, the only signal, to pay an invoice, yes.
Well, all parties do that, don't they? I mean, no party's going to say, well, yeah, I'll pay you. I don't know if I've received the stuff, but I'll pay you anyway, right? They're all going to have some signal that they've actually received something that they didn't need to pay for.
And if it's a written signal that is forged, it's covered.
Counsel, do you agree in discussing this procedure? Page 19, and you don't have to look at it, I'll read the sentence. You can pull it up if you wish, however. Page 19 of your opposing counsel's brief sets out the procedure and then says, likes accounts payable department would pay Pallet Central based on a three-part voucher, which included an invoice from Pallet Central as well as the delivery ticket. Is that your position also?
Yes.
Is it your position that this signature acknowledges receipt?
It is. Directs payment.
Is it your position that it's a dual purpose, acknowledging receipt and direction to pay?
Exactly, and that's what we said in one of our briefs. This particular arrangement may be unique. Where I was beginning to go in responding to Justice Bradley. That's where the Court of Appeals and the Circuit Court turned left when I think they should have turned right. This is an individual contract. And it doesn't matter what the rest of the world, the rest of the industry does. If this is a direction to pay utilized by Light, it's covered by Light's insurance policy. It's that simple. The fact that some other warehousemen may not work the same way, may treat their delivery tickets differently, just doesn't matter.
Counsel, does it matter? No, let me say it differently. Is it possible that the direction to pay can be interpreted internally so that the delivery ticket is a direction to like to pay? So they create the invoice, and then from the invoice and the voucher, payment is made to a third party. But does the direction to pay have to be a direction to pay someone outside of like? Could it be a direction from like to create the payment?
That's very possible. It could be an internal direction because this particular policy passage doesn't say it has to be made to third parties. So it could be, embezzlement could be an example that this policy, I haven't thought about it deeply, but this policy may cover.
Counsel,
I'm
wondering if perhaps we're overthinking this a little bit and putting undue significance on the delivery ticket, would an invoice standing by itself constitute a direction to pay?
No.
Why not?
Because it's not a direction.
Well, it's certainly Pallet Central's direction. They're saying pay me. I'm directing you to pay me X number of dollars.
I guess I'm not following the concern, but my understanding of the invoice in this particular setting is that it's a request for payment. Please pay this bill, and it is what it is, the signed delivery ticket that serves as the command to pay the bill.
Can I get back, counsel, to the language in the policy? Because we left off talking about that second section that talks about similar written promises, comma, orders, or directions to pay a sum certain. Just based on your reading of that policy, I know we talked about ambiguity. Are you reading the written component of that to only apply to promises, and then orders or directions to pay a sum certain are separate?
No, that's another source of confusion.
Okay.
You can read that two ways. You can read it as the Court of Appeals read it. The other written promises, orders, or directions to pay have to be similar to checks, promissory notes, etc. Or you can read it as informative. The things that checks, drafts, promissory notes, convenience checks, HELOC checks, all have in common is that they are a written promise, order, or direction to pay. If either of those readings is a plausible, reasonable reading, you have an ambiguity and coverage follows. And that's the other central issue in this case. Writing a policy that says, by the way, we will cover anything else that happens to be similar to what we've said we're going to cover, it has it backwards.
So similar is the key word, really. Because they included the key word and they write the policy, it's your position, if it could be read different ways, that you get the benefit because you're the insured.
How is Light supposed to know what Hiscox thinks is similar? What an insurance is it's in exchange for a premium, in exchange for money, often a lot of money, you are assured by an insurance company that they will cover defined risks. This is the antithesis of a defined risk. This says, by the way, we'll cover anything else that happens to be similar, but you're going to have to wait for a loss, and then we'll tell you whether we think it's similar or not. It leaves it to the insured to intuit what the insurer is thinking.
So, counsel, which of these is this delivery ticket similar to? A check, draft, promissory note, convenience check, or HELOC check?
I think it is similar to any one that is a direction to pay.
All right. So in which of these in that list would be a direction to pay?
Well, a check would be a direction to a bank to make payment of promise.
Yes. Good. So let's stop there. So that is party A directing party B to pay party C, right?
Yes.
Does the delivery ticket function in the similar fashion?
Yes.
Okay, so who's party A, B, and C?
Well, you don't have three parties in that particular setting. You have two. You can consider two components of Light to be one. It's a direction to their finance or billing department to pay Pallet Central. So you have party B and C.
Yeah. So I don't want to necessarily, and maybe I do, and maybe I do, but I don't think we necessarily have to talk about how many angels can dance on the head of a pen. But I wonder if in this pattern of A, B, and C, we can conflate two of them such that Light is directing itself to do something.
Does that make any sense? That's what I was alluding to. There's nothing in this policy that says a bank has to be involved. Payment has to come from a bank, and that's what the circuit court essentially ruled.
Right, but doesn't it, when we talk about a direction to pay, aren't we necessarily talking about party A directing party B to pay party C?
No.
Why does it make sense to talk in terms of directing directing oneself to pay something. I don't know how that makes sense.
Because of what the policy says. The policy says it has to be a direction to pay, not a party, but money.
Right. So what I'm trying to figure out, though, is I think we're all fairly aware of how commercial paper works. And so when we talk about a direction to pay, we automatically springs to mind one party directing another to pay a third. So what I'm trying to figure out is how can we use that terminology, direction to pay, to refer to I'm directing myself to pay, right? I don't know how that works aside from just
I can't answer your question because I disagree with your premise.
Okay.
The premise is that it's a three-party transaction, and there's nothing in this policy that requires a three-party transaction. It has to be a direction to pay money.
You might run out of time. So if we do, then maybe when you respond, you can answer these questions. But a couple of phrases in here are something I'd like you to explain to me. When there is a direction to pay, who does the directing? And does it matter? In the forged document, where is that alone? Where is the direction to pay? And then third, it talks of a direct loss, the very first part of the sentence. It doesn't say indirect loss, direct loss, loss resulting directly is the phrase. So where is the direct loss of the forgery by the one directing that payment?
Let me begin with the last question first. The loss here is direct because it results in the transfer of money from Light's bank account to Pallet Central. No more direct a loss than that.
And I know your red light is on, so just when you come back up, you're leaping ahead of me a little bit, and I need to go backwards a little. The document that directs the payment, right? And that document that was forged is the direct loss. Those are the two things that have to be connected up.
I'll have to ask you to clarify the question because I'm not following.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court.
Good morning. I hear you.
I try to speak loudly and directly. Madam Chief Justice and Justices, my pleasure to be here. My name is Jeff Level. I have the honor of representing Hiscox in this matter. What brings us together is a forgery coverage in a crime policy. And I think an important thing to keep in mind is that this forgery policy has very specific language. It's not a policy that covers forgery. It covers forgery defined as the forgery of certain instruments, checks, drafts, promissory notes, and similar promises, orders, or directions to pay a sum certain. That's prong one. To get coverage, Like also has to prove prong two. Prong two is this instrument must be made or drawn on Light.
Okay, and that prong two, no one has really discussed that up until now, and if that's an issue, sounds like that needs to go back to the courts to deal with, right? That there has been no findings on made or drawn at this point, correct?
Well, if I could respectfully disagree, a good portion of our brief was devoted to the drawn issue. So, for example,
well, now it is, but up until now, right? The Court of Appeals, the Circuit Court, was that addressed at all?
In our briefing in the Court of Appeals, it was. The Court of Appeals chose to focus on the instrument issue, and having decided that adverse to Light, it did not proceed to the second issue. It's common approach when one prong is fatal to the claim for coverage. And so I have to respectfully disagree that the drawn issue was not only addressed in our briefs, but we cited numerous decisions on it, like Baptist
but
Health.
From a factual perspective, though, I'm not talking about the law. I'm talking about the facts. This was decided on summary judgment. Is there enough facts in this record for us to even make that conclusion about the second prong?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, tell me why.
And the reason for that is found in document 19, page 18. That is the exemplar forged delivery ticket. That is what Light contends is the forged direction to pay that invokes coverage here. And so that exemplar was treated at the Circuit Court and the Court of Appeals as an example of the forged document that has to be made or drawn on light in order for coverage to occur. So I firmly believe that the record before you is complete on this issue. This document, this forged delivery ticket, is not a written similar promise order or direction to pay a sum certain. In fact, you'll look in vain to find a sum on this. There is no dollar figure on this forged document. No sum whatsoever.
Should we interpret made or drawn by in a technical sense, or are these common language terms?
I submit to you the common language terms, and I tell you, I think you learn it in elementary school when you learn about checks and how a check is drawn upon an account. I recognize Light argues that drawn or made are hyper-technical terms. We respectfully disagree. Made or drawn are something that, at least up until now, with the electronic age, things are changing a bit. But the reasonable insured recognizes that it makes a note or it draws upon a checking account when it writes a check. And I don't think you have to get hyper-technical to conclude that.
Context is important, though, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And should we interpret similar written promises, orders, or directions to pay as referring only to negotiable instruments?
I think the similar promises, orders, or directions to pay is hearkening to a similarity to a check or a draft or a promissory note.
Could it be something other than a negotiable instrument or commercial paper?
I think it has to be similar. And I think that language was purposely chosen because the commercial world evolves constantly. And this language, by the way, it's derived from ISO forms that the Insurance Services Organization produces. And there are reasons why Hiscox and other insurers would use it for issues of like uniformity of court interpretation across the country. So the similarity is intended to hook in something that's similar to a check or a draft or a promissory note. And I think that is a very important point that is lost in Like's argument. Like argues that the delivery ticket is a direction to pay, but that doesn't answer the full question. It has to meet the definition and the prong, the first prong, it has to be a direction to pay sum certain, and it also has to be similar to a check, a draft, or a promissory.
No, counsel,
if I may.
Oh,
counsel, I want to ask a question, but I also want you to answer the question that was just asked. And the question that was just asked was, can it be something other? And your response is, it has to be similar. So what's the answer to, can it be something other than that litany that precedes the word similar?
Yeah, I think by definition, it has to have the characteristics of those examples, but it could be something different.
Can I just follow up since you brought it up again? My particular question was, can it be something that is not a negotiable instrument or commercial paper?
The policy language that's pertinent here doesn't use the phrase commercial paper, so I think it could be. It has to be similar to a check, a draft, or a promissory note.
So, counsel, obviously, if it's similar to, it's not the same thing as. I'm sorry, were you finished, Justice Bradley?
This Justice Bradley is finished. I think
yes,
the other
one,
Justice
you,
Bradley had a
finished?
Question.
That's right. Who's on first? If you don't mind, I will.
Please
Thank
do.
You. What's on second, I guess? You have been discussing what you call the second prong of the test, that is language generally speaking that states, as soon as I can find it, drawn, were made, drawn by, or drawn upon, as I understand it. However, that comes from the first alternative of the second prong. What about the second alternative? It appears to me to be right on point. It appears to me to be that it deals with a situation where an agent's signature
is forged, and yet you don't seem to address that second alternative of the second prong. Can you respond, please?
Yes, Your Honor, Justice Bradley, thank you. The second subsection of the second prong pertains to forgery of a document that is made or drawn by one acting as your agent.
Or that are purported to have been so made, and that's my whole question, that the forged signature is purported to have been made by your agent, that is, your employee. So that seems to be exactly what's being asserted here.
But the definition of forgery looks to what is signed, the document that is signed, and that what we're looking at there is a delivery ticket that is of Pallet Central's origin.
Was the signature forged?
That's the allegation that the signature was forged.
Are you contesting that the signature was forged?
No, I don't think that's
the signature was forged and the delivery ticket was forged. Is that correct?
Well, yeah, I guess because the delivery ticket contains a signature, it's not complete until it contains a signature.
Yes, there's a delivery ticket that's forged, and then on the delivery ticket is a forged signature. As I understand it, you're not contesting that, so I don't know why the second alternative isn't right on point. It is a forged signature purported to have been made by your agent employee. So you just ignore that, and you instead make argument regarding the first alternative. But, of course, they are set forth with the word or as an alternative. So why not the second one, which seems exactly on point here?
To respond to that, the made or drawn phrase pertains to the nature of the document that's involved. So, for example, a check is drawn upon an account. A note is made to evidence a promise. And they look to a fund of money that must automatically be paid upon order or direction. And the made or drawn subject is not something you see in a delivery ticket because it is an evidence of a delivery. It's not drawing upon a fund.
You seem to ignore not that it's just a delivery ticket. This is a signed delivery ticket. Your opposing counsel is not advancing that the delivery ticket in and of itself without a signature is a direction to pay. Rather, they are asserting it is the signature on this delivery ticket that constitutes, with the delivery ticket and the invoice, the three parts which constitute the direction to pay.
I concur. That's certainly their argument, but their argument doesn't meet all the prerequisites of the instrument. So, for example, the delivery ticket says nothing about a sum certain to be paid, nor does it direct anyone to pay it. If it really meant that, you'd have to ask, why was an invoice even necessary in the process?
But in your page 19 of your brief that I referred to earlier with counsel, you indicate that it is Likes account payable department would pay Pallet Central based on a three-part voucher. Payment comes with three parts, which includes an invoice as well as the delivery ticket. And then earlier you talk about that the delivery ticket is signed. So
that's absolutely correct. I agree. And the delivery ticket is evidence of delivery. And the invoice is an ask. It's saying to Like, this is what we want you to pay for what we purport to have delivered. It's not a direction to pay, and it's not the forged document isn't even a direction to pay a sum certain. The forged document contains no sum certain stated on it.
Counsel, what kind of a policy could Like have bought to cover this kind of forgery?
Excellent question, and I'm not certain. I do know that this one doesn't because of the precise language of the policy. We know, for example, because the Court of Appeals in a well-written analysis from Judge Fine discussed and, in METC versus Frontier, this very language. This is not unique policy language.
And it may not be unique, but they've got a problem. This is how they operate their shop, and they pay based on a signed delivery ticket. And here the delivery ticket was forged and the signature on it was forged. They didn't know that, and so it was paid. So how would they insure against that risk? This is a $500,000 chunk of money that came out with this. So it was not a small hazard.
That is correct. The short answer is I'm not certain I can answer your question. I'd be more than willing to submit supplemental materials and argument if the court would wish for me to address what other products in the marketplace that are offered by insurers might cover it.
Do you agree that this, when you talk about the language and the simplicity of it, but with that word similar where it is, you're reading it one way, opposing counsel's reading it another way, and don't you then see that it could be ambiguous, in which case it goes against who has the ability to write this however you want to write it?
No, and that answer has a couple of subparts.
Okay.
First, and we talked about ejusdem generis in our brief, and I think a quick excerpt from the custom-made decision is really pertinent to this. It's in a footnote where the court said, people use the principles of ejusdem generis and nascitur os socis all the time to understand ordinary speech without realizing they are doing so. When the waiter says, would you like a cocktail, wine, anything else, we know he or she is asking for a drink order, not a dessert order, and not whether you would like to buy a new car. So, end of quote. The court is saying we all live by, as we read the English language, this idea of generis. We don't use the Latin to describe
right,
it.
Right, but you not only have the word similar, you also have or directions to pay a sum certain. I mean, I don't think your ejusdem generis argument in this particular case. Give me another argument.
Okay. Even if this clause were ambiguous, the rule that requires interpretation or construction against the insurer doesn't mean you obliterate the whole rest of the language in the policy. So, for example, even if this word similar were similar promises, et cetera, were deemed to be ambiguous, it doesn't take out of the sentence to pay a sum certain, nor does it take out of the second prong the made or drawn requirement. So I urge you not, if you were to find this one word ambiguous, throwing the baby out with the bathwater would be contrary to interpretive rules and obliterate the whole rest of the coverage.
So, counsel, going a little further along with this word similar, obviously that means something that's not the same as the things that came before the word. So what are the irreducible essentials that must be shared in a written promise, order, or direction to pay a sum certain in money? What are the essentials that have to be similar or be the same as that preceding list?
There has to be a written direction. There has to be a fund from which it's paid. The direction has to be a direction, not an ask. In other words, the essence of a check is there's a fund there to answer to this order stated in the check. And I think those are the essentials. If I could give you another example, in the construction trade, when a loan has been made and the owner directs by writing that the holder of the funds, the loan to fund the contractor's work, orders a disbursement from it, that is a dollar amount stated, that would be a written direction to pay a sum certain from a fund. And I think that's what we're looking at here, is a check, a draft, a promissory note. They all specify sum certains, and they all oblige someone to pay it upon certain terms.
And when it's a direction to pay, does it need to be a direction for someone else to pay a third party, or it could be a direction for yourself to pay someone?
I think, hearkening to your earlier questions, I think the only paradigm that makes sense is A, B, and C, because I can't direct myself to pay myself. I mean, it defies logic. I think there is a three-part concept involved, and that makes it similar to a check.
Does that apply to a promissory note, though? The three-party situation.
Well, that would be a promise to pay, right? Not a direction to pay.
Right. Yeah. That's a promise to pay, and then how direct, you know, that depends on the terms of the note. So like a note that has to be paid on demand, upon demand becomes a direction to pay.
And you suggested that the origin of the delivery ticket, the document that's operative in this case, makes a difference, the fact that it's pallet centrals rather than lights. Could you expand on the significance of the origin document?
Yes, I think it's important in a number of different ways. One is this to the made or drawn upon prong, because it is the delivery ticket is from beginning to end of the origin of pallet central. It's not drawn on like's account or fund in any sense of the word. And even the signature, which purports to be that of a liked employee, isn't. That's the whole essence of the forged claim, is that it was actually forged by somebody at Pallet Central. So that's why the look of this is important, that it's entitled Delivery Ticket and it's entitled Pallet Central Enterprises, Inc.
Counsel?
Also important is the lack of a sum certain.
If you're done.
If okay. You sound answering the question.
Counsel, is the second item the invoice, which is based on the delivery ticket, which also has the same heading, Pallet Central Enterprises, is that a forged document?
No.
Who made it?
Well, I think Pallet Central made it, but it's not signed, and the policy defines forgery as a signature on a written.
I understand that, but what I'm saying to you is this is part of a two-piece. So the forgery had two pieces that were initially made, one of which was signed and one of which was not. Is that correct?
The invoice is not signed, the exemplar, correct.
Well, I understand, but that wasn't my question. I can see it's not signed. My question was the invoice forged?
No, not as defined in the policy. The policy.
Okay, that's not what I asked you. Okay, who made the invoice?
I'm sorry?
Who made the invoice?
Pallet Central.
Okay, that answers my question.
Counsel, could I ask you a question? Two things that I was trying to ask opposing counsel the same thing, and I may not have done it very well. So I'm going to try the same thing with you and see if you can help me with this. We are stuck on the language in the policy, directions to pay a sum certain. But there's also a different phrase in the policy at the beginning of each of these sections that talks about we will pay for loss resulting directly from, and then a thing to happen. It doesn't say we will pay for loss resulting from forgery. It has to be resulting directly from the thing, which here the argument is it is a direction to pay. So does that word directly mean anything in the policy? And second, is a direction to pay the same as a request to pay?
If I could answer the second one first.
Yes, it's easy.
Yeah, that one, a request okay. is not a direction.
Okay,
and that's
so
why
what
I say,
do we have here that was forged? Was the forged document a direction to pay? Or a request for payment that upon receipt, typically the company who can direct payment takes action?
I submit to you and has argued that the delivery ticket is neither. It doesn't request payment. It doesn't state a sum certain. It's evidence of delivery at most. And then the invoice.
Okay, let me just stop you there. If direction to pay and request to pay, If a delivery ticket plus an invoice equals a direction to pay, not just a request to pay, where down the line would that stop? I mean, would the order be part of it? Because with the order, if a forged order happens, then that ultimately would end up in a direction to pay, because without the order, there wouldn't be a delivery ticket, there wouldn't be an invoice, and there wouldn't ultimately be a direction to pay. I'm trying to figure out if this word directly in your policy means anything. Not direction to pay. Two different things, two different directs, but directly versus direction to pay. That's a sticking point for me. Can you help me with that?
I can try, and here's how I would answer it. And I think the answer starts with the Catsy case. This is the cow case, Catsy versus Randolph and Scott. This was cited by the circuit court when it entered its decision. And there it addressed whether there was direct loss or not in a scheme that occurred there. And the court, particularly at page 215 and 116 with second, addressed that. And the gist of its addressing it was the loss that was sustained was not the direct result of the forgery, but rather the result of the failure of the farmer to check, the cattle person to check the invoices. And I think that's what the circuit court was thinking when it looked at this, because what happens here is Light gets this invoice and this delivery ticket, and it's forged. And it, lights don't go on. It's not thinking about it. So it wasn't, the loss was directly from Light's failure to look at this invoice and recognize it didn't get its pallets. It was not checking its warehouse to see about pallets delivered. It wasn't checking signatures to see if they were correct. And so I submit that that's probably how that direct loss is problematic here. And may not, this may not be a direct loss as a result of forgery, but rather as a result of Light's business practice, the way it handled this. Now, having said that, I would be the first to say that issue isn't very thoroughly addressed in the briefs. And this, neither the circuit court nor the court of appeals, the circuit court did a little bit. The court of appeals did not. The court of appeals lasered in on the similar to checks direction to pay in some certain issue. And I'm sorry for that long answer. Hopefully that was an answer that helps. All right. Seeing no questions, I'll move to some subjects in my outline here. The the petitioner argues here that the delivery ticket is a direction to pay, a direction to Light's finance department to make payment. But if you look at the delivery ticket, it is the underpinning of the invoice, not a pay direction. And you have to ask yourself, why would an invoice be created if the forged document, the delivery ticket, was a similar direction to pay a sum certain?
But the forged document, the invoice, is forged too. It may not be signed, but it was created by the same person who took Light's money without delivering pallets, which is why I was bugging you before about who made the delivery, who made the invoice. The same forger made the invoice as made the delivery ticket and signed the delivery ticket, but they just didn't sign the invoice, right?
Yes, I understand the court's concern and question, but I urge the court to look at the definition of forgery, and it's found at Record Document 18, page 26 in the policy.
But if they sent both of these documents to Light for payment together, why does each one individually have to be signed when they were sent together by the forger?
Because one of the prongs of coverage is that the forged document, the forged similar to a check, et cetera, document has to be signed. And it, the definition says forgery means the signing of the name.
What if I were to interpret both documents as one? To me, the invoice and the delivery ticket, it's just a two-page forged document, the first page of which is signed, second page isn't signed. What about that?
Well, I think you heard earlier from my opponent that they don't view the invoice as a direction to pay. The invoice is an ask. He agreed in oral argument, and that is the essence of
argument. I know, but
what
I'm saying to you is why can't I say that we have one document, one forgery, okay? It consists of two pages. The first page is delivery ticket, which is signed, and the second page of the forged document, singular, is the invoice. Why isn't that reasonable?
Well, if you were to do that, you'd have to ignore the fact that one's called an invoice and one is called a delivery ticket, and one's signed and one's not. But if you did all that, you would have a sum certain, but you still wouldn't have a direction to pay. An invoice is an ask, and even with the delivery ticket attached to it, it is merely Light's assertion that when it sends it to Georgia Pacific, pay this, please, because we have these pallets for you. It is an ask, not a direction to pay. Unlike a check, which comes to a bank, and the bank is commanded by the check to pay out of the fund to satisfy the payee.
So where the problem came in is these two were sent by Light, these two documents, or one document with two pages, were sent to Georgia Pacific, and Georgia Pacific paid, which was according to their usual and customary. And then they found out they didn't get what they thought they were getting, and so Like had to reimburse Georgia Pacific, right?
Yes.
Is that where we are?
That's kind of it in a general way.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yes. Agreed. The I see my yellow light's on, but I do want to emphasize the relevance here of the MATC versus Frontier case. And I submit to you, it's very important.
Isn't that the case that imports the UCC? It caused me to pause because I don't think most reasonable insureds would go to the UCC definition regarding commercial papers to interpret this kind of a policy.
Well,
Or is that the wrong case that I'm dealing with?
I respectfully disagree. I don't think it relies on the UCC for its ultimate conclusion on this issue. And I would direct you to paragraph 8, particularly of this decision. And there it talks about the claim for coverage. There it wasn't a forgery, it was an alteration issue, but the policy kind of treats them as an either-or proposition in that case. And the court said, there is an insurmountable hurdle to this. The check ledgers are not covered instruments, as that phrase is defined by the St. Paul Travelers policy. And so it's looking to the policy for the definition, and it's not citing to the UCC specifically for its authority, and that's at paragraph 8.
Maybe I was thinking of the Baptist case. That's a different case, yes?
Yes, Baptist.
That was the one that you suggested we should look at the UCC language, and that kind of threw me because, of course, that's not the ordinary language that a reasonable insured would be.
Well, what about commercial entities, though? We're not dealing with individuals here.
Right, and if I could respond directly to that. That's a Baptist Health is a Fifth Circuit decision that looks at those definitions of check and particularly made or drawn, and it's looking at it in terms of a sophisticated healthcare institution that has to apply the UCC in its ordinary business practice, just like a Like or a Georgia Pacific does in its ordinary business practice. It's not something an artist or a clothing salesperson necessarily would have as a part of their ordinary parlance, but certainly someone in the commercial world like Light or like Georgia Pacific or like Pallet Central, which is a nationwide brokerage house for pallets, would have within its ordinary understanding of the language. The reasonable insured in those arenas certainly has some inkling of what the UCC means with regard to check, draw, and made. And if I could make one other point on that, and that is the Court of Appeals decision here, a per curiam, three judges looked at it. I submit this shouldn't be a close case, but in that per curiam, unpublished, they relied on the dictionary definition of those terms, and that's particularly paragraphs 12 and 13 of the decision, and those dictionary definitions are echoes of the UCC, and I think they're the idea of drawing or making, they're not really that foreign in the business world.
You mentioned...
Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
I see my...
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate your obvious attention to this case.
I should resist the temptation to respond to Mr. Lovell's comments and address Justice Ziegler's question. I think the essence of your question is whether or not this is a direct loss or not. I tried to answer that.
That's part of it. Is it a direct loss? Because the word directly is in there. It must mean something. And second, the direction to pay is different than a request for payment. And I need you to tell me where down the line does something become a direction to pay versus a request to be paid.
I think a direction to pay is different than a request for payment. And that's why Chief Justice Rogensack's point is important. The way the commercial world works is lots of people get together and accomplish something. You know, receiving, gets the goods, finance pays for them. So the idea that somehow or other this needs to be a single document in this particular insurance policy ignores commercial reality.
Is there any stopping point down the line of an order and a delivery and ultimate billing and all that where it is not a direction to pay then?
The stopping point is the voucher. The documents that are assembled to give rise to payment is the document. Whether you consider it a single document or you consider it a group of documents, doesn't matter.
Well, is that a proper request to pay, or is that the direction to pay?
When the forgery is placed on the delivery ticket, or when Light's receiving department signs the delivery ticket without a forgery, it is a direction to pay. That's why they forged it. Without that, there is no right to payment. With it, there's an absolute assurance of payment.
Well, without that, they couldn't have requested payment because they would have said, go back and get this documentation and then we'll consider your
request. If they had just sent an invoice, they would have been told, I assume, again, we're outside the record, you need delivery
tickets. I don't
want to
go outside the record. That was something that was troubling earlier. I think we have to stick with the record we have. So okay. In this record, can you answer that?
In this record, the voucher is what is the compilation of documents that require payment. The key document is the document they forged, and that's what's covered. It is a direction to payment. Without, I can't say it any more simply, that without it, there is no payment. With it, there is a direction for payment.
With it, I mean, that's the part I'm having trouble with. Without that thing, they would send it back and say, we're not paying you, right?
Without a signed or forged.
With that, then they say, okay, this is a proper request. Now we'll consider paying you.
Right. Now we will pay you.
We will direct payment.
Direct.
Now that we received this proper request.
That's right. We will direct our finance
department.
But it's
Georgia Pacific that's being directed to pay,
no,
correct?
No. Light paid and charged Georgia Pacific, to my understanding.
Oh, okay. I thought from what I read, and maybe I misread it, I go back and read again, that Light sent the invoice and the voucher and the ticket to Georgia Pacific. They paid, and then when they didn't get the pallets, Light had to reimburse them.
I think...
No, there wasn't that kind of around the
and
circle.
And again, we're probably outside the record.
No, let's not go there.
If
my misunderstanding, if any, came from the brief. I haven't read anything outside the record, so I'll go back and look again.
If I could take a couple of minutes and address the made argument, there's 3 points I'd like to make on that. There's no doubt that, as Justice Bradley pointed out, that this is a forged document that purported to have been made by Light, and that's what this policy covers. A made means created, formed, constructed. That's how regular people use those words. They don't go to the Uniform Commercial Code and say to themselves, well, maybe the word made is defined in there. It's not. And then they don't go and then they say, well, maybe the present tense of made, make, is defined in there. It's not. They don't go to the Uniform Commercial Code and say, well, maker is defined in there, and that's close enough, so that must mean what this insurance company meant when they wrote this policy, even though they didn't say it.
But it's Pallet Central that made, under your definition, that made the delivery ticket, and it was Light that purportedly just signed it,
well,
right?
But if you wanted to look at it factually, realistically, the delivery ticket is a collaboration between Light and Pallet Central. Because without Light's signature, the delivery ticket is worthless in terms of commanding payment.
Where does it command? I'm sorry. I'll stop.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is a really, really interesting case. So thank you all for bringing it to us, and thank you for fine arguments and very good briefs. We're going to take a brief recess now so that the students can go back to school. If the university is now open, I take it, and another group can come in. We are adjourned.